And finally, promoting peace and dialogue with the Muslim world was the aim of a two-week course that took place recently in Rome and Turin, helping Muslim diplomats to better understand the work of the Holy See and local Catholic organizations. The coordinators of the initiative included the Pontifical Gregorian University here in Rome, the Jacques Maritain International Institute, the Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and St. Joseph's University in Beirut. Diplomats, mainly from North Africa and the Middle East, heard from top Vatican officials, as well as from the heads of Catholic institutes and organizations dealing with delicate issues of international politics and diplomacy.
I think it is very important that the Catholic Church presents its real identity and its functions in the multilateral diplomacy, as well as in various activities that connect the Church and the Holy See to society.
As the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva, Archbishop Silvano Tomasi was one of the speakers, discussing the key role diplomacy can play in easing tensions between the West and the Muslim world.
We have in the West and in the Americas, a difference between religion and society. There is a separation normally between church and state, while in the Islamic tradition, there is one community that combines religious identity and political activity. So this is needed, this kind of distinction, to avoid confusion in the perception of Islamic countries, because they associate everything coming from the West with also Christianity, while many issues, there is almost an antagonistic situation between what some Western countries portend to do vis-a-vis Muslim countries or the values that they want to export and the position of the Holy See. So for all these reasons, I think this experiment of bringing together diplomats from Arab and Muslim countries of the North Africa and the Middle East is a very bright idea. It's this type of concrete dialogue that opens up possibilities of negotiating issues that are difficult and complex in today's world.
This would somehow replace the work of the purely interreligious dialogue. In other words, it's more important perhaps to keep this pluridimensional approach to interreligious dialogue than just a specifically religious approach?
Yes, I think dialogue is articulated in different ways today. I think we have learned a lot in the last 40 years since the Council and the Decree on Religious Freedom. There is a dialogue of life where you have Muslim families and Christian families that interact. They talk, they even discuss their religious identities together in a very informal, very grassroots type of way. And this happens in a lot of areas around Europe with the new immigrant communities. In Africa, I remember Ethiopia, where you have even intermarriage, where one partner is Christian, the other remain Muslim, and they function, and there are no problems. Then you have a second level almost a second level of dialogue where you have religious specialists who talk about their theological differences or their insights, the roots of the connections, the linkages between religions. And this is kind of academic and sincere and important, but it is rarely filters down to the people who are the ones who eventually make the decisions on important issues affecting relationship between states and between communities. And then I think there is a third level, and that is the official political level, where you have in the multilateral system that is developing very fast in today's world, where you have a lot of intergovernmental bodies combining forces, presences from Muslim, Hindu, Confucians, Christians of all denominations. And at this level, you don't enter into a specific discussion of religion, but you confront decisions that affect the lives of people, and these decisions are based on values that come from different cultural and religious traditions that need to be taken into account in order to organize a system of interventions in the international reality that makes some sense for everybody. So this initiative here at the Gregorian University and the Jacques Maritain Institute moves at this third level of dialogue. It's more limited in a way, but more in-depth. So it forces future diplomats to say, well, this is the reality of the Holy See and in the international scene, and it makes a contribution that is acceptable, not only, but it is constructive, and on which we can converge.
We heard Pope Benedict again in Brazil talking about how the Church must stay out of politics if it wishes to continue being an independent observer, an independent entity. And yet you're talking about the interface between politics and religion that in a way cannot be separated. How do you interpret his words on this?
I don't see a contradiction with what the Holy Father is saying, which is right, especially in reference to party politics and to specific ideological convictions that transform political action into de facto political partisan politics. Instead, what I'm talking about in reference to the presence of the Holy See in intergovernmental bodies is a dialogue that deals with the concrete issues, the big problems of peace, of solidarity, of development, human rights, and you go down the line, no? That need to be addressed in a collective way by the international community. Otherwise, we will not find an answer. So this kind of approach is not political in the traditional sense of small politics and the national level, parties and power. It's more on the level of forming an international new culture or way of thinking that converge on supporting basic values. The dignity of the human person, the priority of peace over force, the need of having some form of solidarity with the smaller countries to allow the small economies to enter into the open market and not to have just a few big countries to call the shots and determine what is good or bad, usually for their own interest. So this is the way that the Holy See is present and finds a support and an adherence on the part of other countries and other forces, because there is a lot of goodwill out there on which we need to bank and to use it as leverage to open up possibilities for the construction of a future international society where globalization is not at the service of a few people, but it becomes a mechanism that allows everybody to participate around the table of life.
There is, as you say, an increasing presence of this religious voice, if you like, in forming this new culture that you're talking about. And yet you spoke recently about an anti-religious fanaticism that is becoming a new threat, really, to believers, even in the most democratic countries. What exactly do you mean by that?
In my experience in the Human Rights Council, for example, there is an explicit awareness, and ambassadors talk very openly of the importance of having roundtables on religious freedom, freedom of expression, and the conviction, the deep convictions of people, even if they are not conviction framed in religious terminology or in religious imagery. Because there is a felt need that in order to function in today's world, in international relations, you need to take into account the factor of the deep convictions of people And these convictions are directly affecting their political choices and even conditioning possibilities of economic development. So in that way, I think there is a positive step forward in bringing back, in a way, into the public debate a religious dimension. This is something in the making, something that I perceive as a little bit of a novelty in these international fora. On the other hand, we also have an extreme reaction in some areas of the world against people of different belief and different religious convictions. And this reaction goes into violence on occasions. We have seen examples in various parts of the world, from Turkey to Nigeria to Indonesia and Iraq. What is interesting is that not the governments and not society as such are the actors of these deeds of violence, but are small groups within these societies. They run out of the control of the state, either because the state is too weak or it's unpredictable reactions, but they are the result of a cultural outlook, because these small groups feed on some traditional or fundamentalist interpretations of their beliefs that bring out the worst in the heart of human beings, a sense of revenge, a sense of violence, a sense of extreme defense of an identity that is considered as threatened by people expressing different ideas or proposing, with all freedom and with all respect, an alternative way of thinking. So we have these two phenomena going on side by side, and that's why it's so important to create these kind of links with official people participating in decision-making processes, and above all in the formation of this international future culture, to diffuse the small groups that are fundamentalist in their thinking and allow the common values, as the Holy Father insists, the common reason that we have as human being, as a tool for the real dialogue before any theological discussion. But on this base of an anthropology, of an understanding of the human being, that allows the commonality to take precedence over our different histories and cultural identities.
And my thanks there to Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva.